Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, game week is here. This is a moment that I think both of us were unsure whether it would come, especially back maybe in May, June, July maybe in particular. Wasn't looking so great for season, but the season's here, and I'm pretty confident that the Vols are going to play 10 games this season. What do you think?
I'd like to think they would. Maybe they'll have one cancel. Maybe opponent will drop out. But let's do the best you can with this. I applaud Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, for being patient, not overreacting or reacting too soon as the Big Ten and Pac-12 did. And I think the SEC was very committed to getting this season in, and I'm optimistic about it. You may lose a game. You may lose a few players, but I think they'll do it.
First game out of the chute is 7:30 on Saturday night at South Carolina. And when you look at the schedule, John, you know, we've discussed, and everybody knows, it's an all SEC schedule, 10 games, five opponents ranked in the top 25. And there really is just no margin for error. With the number of ranked opponents on this schedule, games like South Carolina out of the gates, I think have to be a victory for the Vols for this season to go in any way the way I think fans and most of us expect, which is for Tennessee to finish with a winning record this year. But when you think back to last season, I mean, it started in an absolute catastrophe. Tennessee lost to Georgia State, 26-point underdog, and then followed with a loss to BYU. And you look at this season, you know, there's going to be no way to make up that ground. There's no opportunity to close with a six-game winning streak against unranked opponents if you start out of the gates like last year. So I guess it's how concerned should Tennessee be about not letting history repeat itself and not losing another season opener?
Well, I mean, you're always concerned going into any game. And Tennessee is only 3 points favored on the lines I've seen. Now, has BetMGM come out with its line yet? Because that's the gold standard.
The gold standard is out. BetMGM is out, and it is 3 points. So that makes me more comfortable with that three-point line.
Okay. All right. Then it's a three-point line. That's not much. So I don't know if they give 3 points to a team for being at home this year. And you got, what is South Carolina? What will South Carolina have, 20,000 fans in the stands, something like that? I think what's important about this is that I thought the Georgia State game last year, if you go back and look at that, Georgia State was a better team than people thought it would be, and it would have gone better in 8-5 if it hadn't got its quarterback hurt. So, but I just thought Tennessee looked so ill-prepared and didn't look as though it knew what it was doing defensively. The guys weren't lining up right. I don't think you'll see that now. I think you've got – remember, you had an all-new defensive front starting that game. This year, it's an experienced defensive front, pretty experienced defense overall, and with some reserves with experience. So I don't think you'll have some of the same issues. But still, you're playing an SEC opponent, albeit a 4-8 win last year, but I still think this is a tough game. But you're right, Tennessee can't afford to lose this game.
You look at Jeremy Pruitt, John, entering his third season with the Vols, and you know, last year was just a little bit of everything for a head coach. He had some off-the-field issues with players. He had just a disastrous start. I think some fans were already out on Pruitt just, you know, 14, 15 games into his tenure. But then he built up a lot of goodwill over the back stretch of the season by closing with that six-game winning streak, winning the bowl game in dramatic fashion. And now, you know, they always talk about a president's approval ratings. If you were to do approval ratings for Tennessee's head coach among Tennessee's fan base, I think he would enjoy about as good approval ratings as you could expect, you know, for any coach who hasn't been to an SEC championship game in his first two seasons. I think he's got pretty good approval ratings right now. But I think this is one of the more important games in Jeremy Pruitt's tenure to date, because all those favorable approval ratings sort of go out the window, I think, if Tennessee comes out and lays an egg in this season opener, because that would be the third year in a row of Tennessee losing a season opener. It got thumped by West Virginia in Pruitt's first game as Tennessee's coach, and then it totally flopped, as we discussed, in that game against Georgia State. And you were hitting on it there. It wasn't just that Georgia State needed a bunch of miracles to align to pull off that upset. I mean, Tennessee just didn't look prepared for its season opener last season. So if that repeats itself in here, year three, I think all the goodwill, or a lot of the goodwill, that Jeremy Pruitt has built up over the last several months and in the way last season finished could go right out the window. And you got a tough schedule, you know, coming down the tracks after that. And so I guess, am I crazy to think that this, you could state that this is one of the more important games in Jeremy Pruitt's still young tenure with Tennessee?
It is if he loses. If he wins, it's no big deal. But if he loses, it's a really big deal. Approval is really fleeting in the SEC. Coach can have a high approval rating on Friday, and then 2 days later, it could change by about 50 percentile. So, yeah, I just think, because then you combine it with what else has happened in the past, those other two openers. So then you have a theme. Then the fans can look at this. So, well, he's got all off season to prepare for these openers. Now, it was different this year. He didn't have as much. But he had more than a week. He knew who his opponent was. And so fans are going to say, well, the best coaches, you give them more time, they usually win. Give Bill Belichick a lot of time. Give Nick Saban a lot of time. They usually do better. And so I think just the opposite would be true in this case. I think, you know, if you lose.
You know, another reason this opener and I think the opening few games are important, John, is not only for Pruitt's favorability rating, which, as you said, is so fleeting anyway, so maybe I'm spending too much time thinking about that, but maybe even more important is to continue building momentum to close off this 2021 recruiting class. I mean, you look at where Tennessee stands right now in recruiting, and it's not ranked as high as what it once was, but still, this is a class with 25 commitments. It's ranked sixth nationally in the 24/7 sports composite. And I think realistically, the Vols can hope to hang on to a top eight, if not maybe top six or seven recruiting class. But, you know, I mean, those commitments, I think most of those guys are in the class pretty solidly now. But if you start out of the gates in bad fashion against South Carolina or in week two against Missouri, and then you got Georgia coming around the corner in week three, I mean, it's going to make it harder and harder to hang on to those recruits, you know, as you proceed throughout a strange recruiting cycle anyway, where a lot of guys haven't been on campus or been on campus as much as they normally would be. And so I think from a recruiting element too, as Tennessee builds toward what you've identified as maybe Tennessee's best chance for a great season in a long, long time, 2021, you know, as they build toward that, you got to win some games here early this year, I think, to make sure you keep that recruiting class intact.
Yeah, it's sometimes it's really hard to figure how recruits will do, though. You have a bad season. I mean, they still may climb on board. He does have good recruiting momentum, and I think it's really significant that he comes into the season on a six-game winning streak, a streak that should grow to eight games if Tennessee wins as a favorite against South Carolina and Missouri. And then you get the big game with Georgia. I just think it's really important also from a status standpoint. When Tennessee finished last season, it was behind only Georgia and Florida in the SEC East. That's pretty much how it was throughout the 90s. I mean, there was a very clear-cut division of teams in the East. I mean, that was a hierarchy, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, in no particular order. And that's all changed recently. Missouri had a nice one, I think, back-to-back division titles. South Carolina won a division under Spurrier. So I think with Tennessee, at least last year, for the first time in a while, it separated itself from those lower teams. And it wants to stay in there. As long as you're in the same arena with Georgia and Florida, I mean, those are teams expected to finish in the top 10. Florida dropped off for a few years, but that's kind of where you want to be. You want to make a clear distinction with those teams, like, hey, we look down on those guys. They're just so-so programs. We're up there with the elite programs, Georgia and Florida. That's why you need to beat these two teams.
Now, throughout the preseason, John, you never know exactly how a coach is thinking about his team. Sometimes if he really likes his team, he'll act like he doesn't, just so his team doesn't gobble up that rat poison that Nick Saban talks about. Or if he's really concerned about his team, sometimes he acts like he's supremely confident because he doesn't want his team thinking that they stink. So it is hard to get a read, but I do feel like we've been able to identify at least some sense of concern from Pruitt throughout the preseason in terms of, you know, they went a couple weeks there where it was really hard to even conduct practice with the number of guys who were out either having tested positive or in contact tracing quarantine. And so I don't know that I get the sense that he feels his team is prepared as he would like to be. Of course, every coach would like an additional couple of weeks to prepare. I'm not sure they ever feel totally prepared. But, I mean, how much of a concern do you think that is, you know, I guess reading in between the lines on Pruitt? Do you think maybe that there are some warning flags here about this Tennessee team that we're missing or maybe not, you know, giving enough credence to? Or do you think that every coach during an uncertain season like this is probably in a similar situation to Pruitt where they just might not feel like they're as prepared as they would normally be?
I think it's more the latter, Blake, but I also think there's real serious concern for a coach, Jeremy Pruitt in this case, when he's playing so many highly ranked teams, five top 25 opponents. So I think that is a grave concern. I believe that Pruitt, like everybody else, thinks he's got a better team now. To me, there's no reason he wouldn't think this is a better team. He's got an experienced quarterback who's had ups and downs, should be up now. He's got some continuity with his offense, his quarterbacks, solid at the running back position, really good offensive line, potentially one of the best in the country. No great wide receiver, but a lot of guys with potential and a chance one of those guys could emerge, and a pretty solid defense. So I think he feels pretty good about his team, but I'm not sure he feels pretty good about it going against that many highly ranked teams where there's very little margin for error.
John, I'm going to offer a preseason narrative on each side of the ball. If these things become true, that this season really could go awry for Tennessee. And then I want to hear your thoughts as well. On the offensive side, a prevalent preseason narrative is that Tennessee is going to have a dominant offensive line. And so my offensive example of a possible, you know, narrative that could send this season awry is if that offensive line has been overhyped and that really the only top caliber offensive lineman they have is Trey Smith, and then they just have a bunch of average guys. And so if that offensive line is overhyped, I think that could spell trouble for this offense. And then I want to offer one on defense too and then get your thoughts. Defensively, I think a preseason narrative that maybe is not being discussed enough is whether Tennessee has any good linebackers beyond Henry Toa-Toa. You know, we talk a lot about how we think Toa-Toa is a potential star in the making and how he was so good as a sidekick to Daniel Betulli last year. And I think Toa-Toa is ready to step into Betulli's shoes as the leader of the defense, making the calls, being the star in the middle of that defense. I'm not so much worried about that for Tennessee's sake. But I do wonder, you got to have more than one good linebacker. Last year they had Betulli, they had Toa-Toa, and they had Daryl Taylor bringing pressure off the edge. I'm wondering if it's not being discussed enough or thought about enough that Toa-Toa might just be the only good linebacker that Tennessee has. And if that's the case, it could be a real issue for Tennessee's defense. I guess, what do you think about those two ideas? And is there anything that jumps out to you on either side of the ball about that could be particularly concerning?
Well, let's go back and take the offensive line first. I really believe that Cade Mays will be ready to play. I think he will get a waiver, be allowed to play. Will he play in the first game? I'm not sure of that. But I think he'll be ready for the bulk of the season. So if you've got Cade Mays and Trey Smith, you've got two outstanding offensive linemen. You got two linemen that good, you have a pretty good offensive line. I mean, if the other guys are just average, and I really don't think Wanya Morris will be average. He started last year as a freshman. I think you start as a freshman in the SEC, you've got to be pretty good in the offensive line. The same with Darnell Wright. He probably didn't do as well as Wanya Morris did last year, but to me that shows great potential. And Brandon Kennedy was a backup at Alabama. No shame in that. And now he has a lot of experience. So I feel pretty good about that. Your scenario where this thing might be overrated, I feel pretty good that it's not overrated, that this offensive line will be the real deal. Not exactly sure that where they will settle on Cade Mays playing, but wherever he does, I just think he'll do fine. And I think Tennessee's offensive line will be. Now, you talk about the defense. I think the defense will be solid. But when you mention the linebacking, you're right. You've got one guy that's really proven. Now, I think if this were Alabama and Georgia, you probably wouldn't give it a second thought. The way they've recruited consistently over the last 4 or 5 years, you know they're putting a quality player in there. Oftentimes, the guy they're putting in there was better than the guy they had last year. I still have a lot of hope of Quavarius Crouch turning out to be a really good player. I know I've trumpeted his ability from the time he was signed, but he was one of Tennessee's highest-rated signees. He's very athletic. I read where he's lost some weight, so he may be quicker. However, sometimes at that inside linebacker, experience matters and intuition matters. And guys that you think will be great back there aren't great. Because you talk about how quick a guy is, but another guy who might be slower on his feet recognizes that play right away, and he moves on it. And inside linebackers, a lot about recognition, intuition, and being able to respond quickly, not have to think much. If you're having to think a lot at that position, you're already chasing the play. So that, to me, would be a concern. I think he has tremendous athletic ability, but we haven't seen him do this in a lead role. So to me, how good the linebacking core is, to me, it kind of comes down to Quavarius Crouch. If he's as good as his athleticism says he could be, then Tennessee will be okay.
Yeah, you made a great point there in terms of, you know, the athleticism only meaning so much as an inside linebacker. I think Daniel Batuli was a great example. Like, you know, Batuli had a knee procedure before last season, missed the first couple games. I mean, he wasn't the most explosive, the quickest linebacker in the SEC, but he was a really good player for 3 years for Tennessee because I think it was exactly what he said. He had good intuition. He knew what he was doing. He knew how to get people set up. He knew how to read what the offense was doing, and he frequently found himself in the right place at the right time, and that wasn't by coincidence. And I think Henry Toa is another one of those types of guys. He's got good instincts. I think he's a really smart guy, and I think he's going to be ready for that role in operating that defense. And yeah, as we talked about, I think guys like Quavarius Crouch, to me, are more so than being worried about Toa stepping into a bigger role. It's those other guys around him that'll be interesting to see. I also want to touch on a couple, John, narratives that maybe are getting a lot of conversation that people maybe seem to be worried about that I think are being a little overblown. One, the tight end position. I've probably fallen guilty of this along with others. I mean, the Austin Pope, we don't know when or if he's going to be available this year. He was a really good blocking tight end last season, but I think I and others maybe have made too much of that. You can probably find another guy who can be a blocking tight end and handle Pope's duties. And in terms of the passing game, it's not like they threw a ton to the tight ends last year anyway. And then two, I think maybe the the contact tracing absences, and you know, I know I mentioned that I think that's concerned Pruitt at times this preseason, and I get as the head coach why that would be, but I just think every team's probably to some degree going to have dealt with that throughout the preseason of not having a lot of guys available at different times. And I just think Tennessee has better depth than it's had in several seasons. So I think, you know, the fact that they were without a slew of guys in early September really maybe shouldn't hamstring this team, you know, once we get into the first couple games of the season.
That's valid. Yeah, I guess the other concern I have defensively, and it's not a big one, is I kind of would like to see that defensive front step up and make more plays and just have a greater presence in the opponent's backfield, just make more headway there. I really like the way it played down the stretch. I like the way Greg Emerson played. And certainly Daryl Milton was a much better player at the end of the season than he was when the season started. The same for Aubrey Solomon. I don't think Solomon or Middleton played well at all against Georgia State. I think they had major problems, which naturally raised concerns. I just think they will be comfortable now. You know, can they really impose their will at the line of scrimmage and get in the opponent's backfield, disrupt plays? I guess just build on what they did at the end in the second half of the season. And right now I would say, if you're looking at that defensive front, I think it has the potential maybe to be in the top half of the league, but you got to go out and do it. And there's some really good defensive fronts in this league.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that defensive line, John, because that's going to be interesting to watch, particularly Saturday, because I think we both gave Tracy Rocker really high marks. He had a cast of, frankly, nobodies. I mean, it's like that line off Major League, you know, when they get all these replacement players in there and they say, who are these guys? You know, I mean, you looked at Tennessee's defensive line at the beginning of the year and it truly is like, who are these guys? It's a bunch of three-star linemen. And they looked terrible at the beginning of the season. But by the end of the year, they were really a pretty competent defensive line. Not always hugely disruptive, but I thought they held their own. Well, Tracy Rocker left. Not only did he leave, he left for South Carolina. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to see on Saturday how much does Tennessee miss Tracy Rocker on that defensive line and how good does South Carolina's defensive line look with Tracy Rocker now coaching their unit.
Wouldn't it be ironic if the game actually turned on the defensive line because Tracy Rocker molded Tennessee's defensive front, and now he's doing the same thing at South Carolina. And that's an interesting point because South Carolina has a couple of young defensive linemen. Zach Pickens is right now is slotted at a defensive tackle. He was one of the highest rated recruits in the country in the 2019 class. And now you bring in five-star Jordan Burch, one of the highest-ranked players in the 2020 class. I mean, they're comparing him to Jadeveon Clowney. I guess any really good defensive lineman that's recruited to South Carolina would be compared to Jadeveon Clowney. But Tracy Rocker has a really good track record of developing linemen, defensive linemen, and making them better than they were. And if he could do that with those two guys, you have one good lineman at South Carolina and Aaron Sterling. I think he could be defensive end. Had six sacks last year. I think he can be one of the league's better defensive ends. Keir Thomas missed all but two games last year on the inside. He was a pretty good player with good potential a couple of years ago till he was injured. So now if Burch and Zach Pickens, and Pickens kind of struggled last year. I say struggle because he had such high expectations. He's not the first four or five-star defensive lineman that we've seen not have an impact right away. It happens a lot. But I think if Tracy Rocker could really upgrade his play And then Jordan Birch comes in here and has an immediate impact as a freshman. Then you're talking about a pretty good defensive line for South Carolina. And see, my take on this game is if South Carolina's defensive front's not really good, it's in big trouble against Tennessee. You don't normally think of position coaches as, well, he could be a key factor in this game, but I kind of think Tracy Rocker might be.
John, we've gotten this far in the podcast somehow without mentioning the quarterback position. You know, Tennessee's got one of the most veteran guys in the league, and Jarrett Garantano, wildly inconsistent. I think the hope is from Tennessee that he'll be better working within the same offensive system for a second season in a row. And South Carolina, a little bit of a surprise, I think. Not a huge shock, but a small surprise that it made a change at the quarterback position. And Colorado State graduate transfer Colin Hill will start at quarterback over Ryan Helinski. Of course, Hill was the quarterback at Colorado State under Mike Bobo, who's now the offensive coordinator at South Carolina. Who do you think gets the better quarterback play on Saturday? Do you think it's Garantano or Hill? And how important do you think that will be in the outcome of this game?
Well, I think it'll be very important. I think Garantano was very efficient against South Carolina last year. Didn't throw any INTs, as I recall. Threw a couple of touchdown passes, 11 and 19. One of his better games, one of his more consistent games. So I would feel pretty good about Tennessee's chances there. However, Colin Hill, to me, is a wild card. I mean, if you're playing Ryan Helinski, I watched Ryan Helinski all through last season, watched him come in and win the job when Jake Bentley transferred. So they bring in Colin Hill, and I think, he was, bring in Ryan Helinski. Right out of the chute, I thought he did pretty well. He's a true freshman. The more I watched him, his play seemed to be less efficient. He wasn't very good against Tennessee, threw the ball a lot, but I just thought he was slow in his decision-making. They bring in Mike Bobo from Colorado State and a new offense for Helinski to learn. No spring practice, a disjointed preseason practice. So I thought that was really hurtful for him and his development.
Prediction time. Are the Vols going to win? Are they going to cover? What do you got score-wise for Saturday?
Do you think it's unethical for me as a sports journalist to bet on games?
You know, I think the way we view betting in society is so different now. I would have said a handful of years ago that it's probably not great as a sports columnist if you're betting on games that you're covering. But I don't know. We view betting differently now. So I guess, I mean, I don't see it as so taboo anymore.
So if I want to get on an offshore betting site and play a couple of hundred on the Vols, you'd be okay with that?
Offshore, no. I think our company would frown on offshore betting. If you wanted to bet onshore through a legalized U.S. government approved system or state government approved system, I think you'd probably be all right.
What about Fredo about 3 miles away? You think if I call him up and put down a couple of hundred, you think that's okay?
I think you probably shouldn't be taking career or legal advice from me.
Yeah, you are kind of a gambler. I guess that's why I brought that up. I thought I would get your approval. I feel really good about this game. I know we've mentioned some things that could pose problems for Tennessee, but I just feel really good about Tennessee given only 3 points. I think Tennessee can win this game by a couple of touchdowns. Tracy Rocker, we're in agreement that he's a good defensive line coach. He will have a positive impact on South Carolina. But in a game one, I just don't think it's ready to handle Tennessee's offensive line.
Balls 27-17, win by 10. What's your score? You got one?
Okay. I'll call it Tennessee 30, South Carolina 16.
All right. We both got the Balls to cover, so go out to one of those maybe legally approved gambling institutions and
call Fredo.
All right, John, we'll be back next week to recap this opener and look ahead to Missouri. And thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.